Hello again, podcast listeners from Medical Education. This is Kevin Eva once more, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you from a very, very soggy Vancouver as fall has descended upon us. And I understand similar weather has hit Berlin, which is where my guest is today. I'm going to be speaking with Zeynep Nunes, who's at Charité Medical School in Berlin. Zeynep's a medical doctor and is the head of the progress test for a consortium of 16 German-speaking faculties across Germany and Austria, and just an amazing capacity given that they administer this progress test to 15,000 students every 6 months. Welcome, Zeynep, first of all, to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Glad you could make the time, given how busy I imagine you are creating those assessments and getting them out to such a huge number of students. As you know, the reason that I wanted to chat with you today was because you have a paper coming out in the December issue of Medical Education that uses the progress test data in part to study an interesting issue. The title of the paper for our listeners is The Development of Knowledge in Basic Sciences, a Comparison of Two Curricula. As most of our readers would know, we don't publish a lot of, if any, quality assurance studies or examinations of how effective any particular curriculum has been, but this study in particular seemed to offer some really interesting information with respect to how knowledge might grow at differential rates depending on how the curriculum is set up. And so, Zeynep, maybe I'll start by just asking you to describe the two curricula that are mentioned in your title.
Yes, Kevin, thank you. We in Berlin have a quite unique situation. Since 1999, we have running two medical curricula in parallel. One is a very traditional curriculum. They start with the basic sciences in the first 2 years. They teach en bloc in a very systematic way. And after the teaching has happened, there is an assessment. And when this is passed, the students will never learn the subject again. On the other hand, we have a more integrated curriculum that mainly bases on problem-based learning. And this curriculum meets the subjects in a much more integrated way. So they learn by organ systems and they have problem-based learning, and they never address a subject like anatomy, for example, or surgery in a systematic way. So this is the main difference of our two curriculums, but we have those two curriculums in parallel.
If I've understood correctly, then the actual focal content of the curriculum changes. This isn't simply a PBL versus lecture comparison.
Yes, yeah. We don't present the subjects in a systematic way anymore. And this is why many traditional professors are concerned, and students as well, probably.
Right. And so what has been the motivation to keep both curricula going?
Well, it's more a historical or political situation that happened in our place, that the problem-based integrated curriculum, the so-called reformed medical curriculum, was always research-based. So it was always like a very big pilot project. And only after a few years, they wanted to see if this is really working and if we can dare to replace the traditional curriculum.
Right, okay. And so this has been running for many years in parallel, just to get a sense as to whether or not there are differences that need to be concerned about.
Exactly. And it was only for 60-something students per year who did the reformed curriculum, and the big mass of students, like 600 people a year, would study the traditional way.
Okay, and are those 60 pre-selected in any way? Are there reasons to worry about pre-existing differences between the two groups?
I can't deny that there might be some differences, but how they are selected works like this. The students apply to get a place at Charité, and if they do so, they are asked if they want to enter the lottery for the reformed curriculum. And about two-thirds, maybe 70% of the students agree to enter the lottery. Mm-hmm. And among these 70%, 63 students are randomized, and they enter the reformed curriculum. Yes.
Right. And the amount of time and everything else is the same in the two?
Yes, it's the same amount of time. And the last year, they are together in the clinics. But the 5 years they do before at our medical school, it's an undergraduate entry. They have quite a different way to study.
Right, okay. I'm sure you're looking at any number of outcomes to assess differences between the two groups. This particular paper that you have coming out shortly is really focused on knowledge gain and using the progress test that I alluded to in my introduction. So maybe I could ask you to explain to our listeners how you use the progress testing format.
Yes, the progress test is an interesting format as it focuses on the level of knowledge a student should have after complete undergraduate training. And it is independent from the way of training, if it's block, traditional, or if it's problem-based and integrated, that doesn't matter. But the students do the progress test from the first semester on, and they repeat and repeat the test, and they get better and better every time, depending on their growth of knowledge. And we deliver this test to all of our students, and all of our students have to sit the test. So we have a perfect mean to compare the development of knowledge of these two curricula. And this is what is used to assure that especially the students in the new problem-based curriculum don't lack any knowledge compared to the traditional students.
And there are subtypes of questions within the exam and the way that you use it? Are some focused on basic science and others focused on other issues? Or are there specific content areas that you're trying to prioritize?
We use a blueprint so that we sample the test every time in the same way. Mm-hmm. And the blueprint is mainly focused on organ systems, like respiratory system, for example.
Right.
But the questions come from the different medical subjects, from basic sciences as well as from theoretical sciences and from clinical sciences as well. And it's all preset how many questions have to come from what subjects. And subjects can be anatomy or physiology, but also pathology or pharmacology, and also medicine, surgery, pediatrics, and clinical subjects like that. And it's sampled the same way.
Okay, that's very clear. What led you to think that you might see a difference between the two curricula? Or was it simply the fact that you had to check for the sake of program evaluation? Or was there some theoretical model that you were hoping to test in conducting this work?
To be honest, we didn't think that there would be a big difference concerning the knowledge. Mm-hmm. As theory suggests that if you use problem-based learning, the students do construct their knowledge from their previous knowledge they might have, and we don't know about this, right? And if they are confronted with problems, medical problems, they have to look for the information they are lacking to solve this problem. And this they do during study at home, or maybe they go to lectures or to teachers to help them to get this information and to learn. And our idea, our theory, and also literature suggest that there's not a big difference concerning the knowledge between these two ways to teach. But there's also literature that says that students from problem-based approaches would have less knowledge. Mm-hmm. And other studies who say they might have more knowledge, so this field is not quite clearly studied yet.
Right. And so you found largely that come the end, knowledge was somewhat comparable, consistent with that equivocal data that you're describing, but there seemed to be a very different pattern in terms of how people got to that endpoint. Would you describe your results for us?
Yes, maybe first I have to explain that we were especially looking at the basic science knowledge. The background or the idea, and I've heard this from many other countries as well, that professors and students are concerned that students are lacking the theoretical base of medical knowledge, the basic sciences like anatomy, physiology, biochemistry, etc., if they don't study this in a systematic way. And this concern we wanted to address with our study, and we found that we had the good mean to do that. And our main result we found is that even though the traditional students have a lot of systematic teaching, especially in the first 3 or 4 semesters, they have a little less knowledge in basic science than the PBL students. But after they do our national licensing examination part one, which is a basic science examination, they have a peak of knowledge. They are progressing very quickly. And after this, there's a decrease of knowledge. In contrast, our PBL students have a constant growth of knowledge, but after the traditional students have this peak, they always perform a little weaker. And it's interesting to know that our PBL students don't have to pass this basic science national examination. So we found a much stronger influence of an examination, a big examination, rather than the curriculum, which we found very interesting to think about further.
Absolutely. So just for listeners, in referencing what you're talking about to the graph, if I've understood, there are 10 semesters and you administer this progress test every 6 months, and that licensing exam then takes place around the middle of the curriculum, correct?
After the first 2 years.
Right. Right, so the traditional group, for listeners who might want to pull out the paper, it's the very first figure. The traditional group actually finishes their formal teaching time in the basic sciences, as far as I can tell, by the end of that second year.
Yes.
And they see a massive jump before that exam, suggesting that the traditional curriculum created a very strong foundation on which they were able to prepare for it.
Yes, this has to be discussed, if it's the curriculum that created the foundation or it is the preparation of the students, because they're very afraid of this big exam.
Sure.
And they sit at home and work weeks and weeks and prepare this multiple choice questions, which are available for everyone. And they train and train, and this training has a massive effect. But after their exam, they also start losing knowledge immediately. Mm-hmm. This is very clearly seen in the graph. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting.
Right, lose, but they still do seem to stay at a rate above the constant growth of the other group who's not writing the exam.
Absolutely, they do. That's true. And they also gain again a little bit later on, probably when they have clinical sciences and they can integrate their basic science knowledge, which is again, interesting to see. We have also to see that the problem-based students have much less hours of teaching. They have much less contact with professors from the basic sciences.
Right.
So, and still they perform quite well. And one have to imagine what would happen if the PBL students had a little more hours, and then they would be in the same level as the traditional students, probably, even without this exam. And I don't know what would happen with the traditional students without this big examination, even though they have this many, many hours of teaching.
Right. Yeah, it raises some very intriguing questions that are obviously beyond what you could do in this one study.
Absolutely. This is something that has to be studied further in the future. We couldn't answer to that question, but these are the ideas we have when we look at our graphs and our data.
Right, right. And so that's probably a good point to end on, is to ask you if you have a plan or how you might be able to go about teasing apart some of these questions of whether there is a difference between the two curricula that are creating this opportunity for growth that's being seen, or whether it's purely that fright that comes from having to pass a high-stakes examination.
Exactly. And we want to analyze this data, including our partner medical schools, and they also have traditional curriculums, and other have a more integrated, competence-based or problem-based curricula. So we have more data to analyze, and probably we also need some more questions in the basic science, as it now it's only 15 to 20% of our questions coming from the basic science. So maybe this is not enough to really analyze the entire knowledge development in this field.
Right. Do the integrated curricula from the other schools, do those students have to write the licensing exam?
No, they don't.
None of them. Okay.
No. The traditional students, yes. According to our legal system in Germany, if you have an integrated curriculum, you can apply not to do this basic science examination, as you don't teach the basic science in that way. So The reformed curricula in Germany don't sit the first part of the licensing examination, but they do sit the second part at the end of the medical education.
Right, okay.
Was that easy to understand?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think, as I said, this study raises some intriguing thoughts and seems, at least on first glance, to reinforce the lessons we know about the steering effect of examinations and their use as a pedagogical intervention in their own right by creating that sort of motivation to
exactly.
really incorporate this sort of knowledge.
Yeah, another thing we thought about is that maybe doing the progress test in itself might have an influence on the development of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
As we know from the literature published by, for example, Rödiger and Kapicke, they found that repeated testing can create quite a strong knowledge base. So maybe as progress testing is repeated testing, but with bigger time intervals, but maybe the progress testing in itself has an influence. And this is an interesting to see at examinations, to get away a little bit from the idea of assuring testing, but more feedback-oriented assessment for learning that really does produce some knowledge, the testing in itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, very intriguing and many questions. And so I think we should probably wrap things up there, in part because our listeners won't know that we're recording this on Halloween and you're sitting expecting children to be knocking on your door
yeah.
any moment. So we should probably get out while the getting is good. And thank good fortune we were able to wrap this up before they started knocking on your door.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I greatly appreciate you making the time to chat with me this evening, and I hope you have a great Halloween. And I'll just tell our listeners again that I've been speaking with Zineb Nunes, who's at Charité Medical School in Berlin. And the paper that we've been discussing is called Development of Knowledge in Basic Sciences, a comparison of two medical curricula, I should say. And it's going to be out in the December 2012 issue of Medical Education. So thanks again, Zineb, and I will wish
Thank
you
you,
well.
Kevin.
Yeah, my pleasure.